Welcome to the Business of Behavior podcast, hosted by Dr. Becca Tagg. We support clinicians who have been bitten by the entrepreneurial bug, looking to strengthen their practice to better serve their clients, employees, and themselves. Hello and welcome to the Business of Behavior podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Becca Tagg, and I'm excited today because I have Joanna Eddy here, which means, again, I don't have to just talk to my blank computer screen or the microphone. I get to engage with somebody else who has an area of expertise separate from my own. And so Joanna is a CPA, so we're going to talk about five tips for cash flow management for ABA business owners and managers, and she has tons of experience and knowledge in this area, so I'm really excited to talk with her. And before we get started, I want to tell you a little bit about Joanna. So she has a bachelor's degree in business administration from Florida Atlantic University and a master's degree in accounting from the University of Notre Dame. Her master's degree concentrated on financial reporting and assurance. She worked really hard to put herself through college by working full-time in the healthcare industry, where she obtained a really strong understanding of the revenue cycles and the roles of insurance companies. And as you guys know, that is specific to our business, right? So she satisfied all requirements to receive her CPA license 1 year after graduation from the University of Notre Dame, and spent the first 5 years of her professional career auditing the financial statements of large corporations. Her specialty was publicly traded companies, meaning ones who had their stocks traded on stock exchanges like the New York Stock Exchange. Her job was to ensure their financial statements were free from material errors and that they had sound internal controls. After identifying the large need for an accountant that understood ABA, she opened her own business, and we're so glad she did. She concentrates on consulting and advising ABA companies on all financial aspects of their businesses. She's also a professor of financial and managerial accounting at Miami-Dade College, and she sits on the council of the Florida Institute of Certified Public Accountants. So welcome, Joanna. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Maybe a good place to start would be to talk about what is a CPA.
Okay, great. So a CPA is a particular type of accountant that's met certain requirements. Those requirements are, depending on the state, it varies, but in most states, it's now 5 years of education, a minimum, where they're required to take certain accounting courses, finance, marketing, economics, really all sources of business to have a thorough understanding of how the business works. Because accounting is basically the language of the business, right? It's they're the ones keeping track of all business transactions. To be a good accountant, you have to understand all facets of the business.
Yes.
So a certified public accountant meet these requirements in the state. So typically 5 years minimum of education, and they have to pass four rigorous exams that cover accounting, auditing, tax, economics, finance, and business law. And so when they pass those four exams and they get their education, they also have a work requirement. They have to work a certain number of hours before the license is given to them. Again, it varies by states, but in most states, it's at least 1 year full-time work under the supervision of another CPA before the license is granted.
Perfect. I want to interrupt just to draw some parallels for our listeners, right? So this is similar to our applied education, right? So there's a classroom education component, there's a practical application component, there's an exam, right? So this is an entirely separate career. It's a field, it's a specialty. And so I want to be really clear about the value and the expertise that CPAs have.
Yeah. So yeah, it's very similar to when BCBAs tell me about what they go through. I always compare it and tell them how it is similar. So similar to you guys too, once we get the license, it's not just ours forever. Certain things have to happen. We need to continue our education, right? We need to satisfy continuing education every year. We have to abide by ethical guidelines. Like you guys, they could take our license away just like you guys. There's a board governing it. They'll call you. There's disciplinary action.
Mm-hmm.
a lot at stake for a CPA versus just a regular accountant, because they don't really have a lot to lose, right? After
the
investment you've made to get your license, most of us are very careful to maintain our license, to abide by those ethical guidelines, to continue our education, and to keep up to date on everything we need to be keeping up to date.
And so I want to draw attention to that point too, guys. So a CPA is, let's say if we're going to do analogies, right? So a CPA is to a BCBA what an accountant is to a behavior specialist, right? So a CPA has a governing body. You've met specific requirements. There's a code of ethics. Somebody is regulating what you do. Whereas if a person is not a CPA but is an accountant, they may have some knowledge, but there's no, nobody's governing it. There's no minimum. There's no standard necessarily. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so no oversight, basically, right?
Right, yes, yes, okay.
So most people know CPAs in relation to taxes. Often if I meet somebody and I say I'm a CPA, they assume that all I do is do taxes, right? And that could be true for a grand variety of CPAs you meet. They might buy some tax and they might just do tax. So that's that. So if you're looking for a tax accountant, that's important, very important when you're saying I went to a tax preparer versus a CPA. Because a tax preparer has no requirement to even have an education in any type of accounting or tax. Basically, like if you, Becca, wanted to file taxes, you just go to the IRS and they do a background check. As long as you never committed a crime on paper, they'll give you a number and you can go around saying that you can do taxes. So that's always something I warn people about. Be weary about the tax preparers that you encounter, because they might not know what they need to know to help keep you within the legal bounds to keep you out of trouble.
Especially when we're talking about business, right? Because, right, so that's even more complex to my neophyte understanding, right? But that a business is a much more complex structure than an individual tax. So when we're talking about people who are doing your business taxes, look, that's a big deal. And so we want somebody who has the most education and experience and a governing body to help us, because the financial health and wellness of our business determines business life, right? And so we really, it's very important.
Yeah. So that's what most people who use CCP think of as a tax, right? But the truth is that there's a grand variety of what CPAs do, and they're kind of like lawyers. Like, you can ask them what do you specialize in, because they might not just be tax accountants. And even if they are tax accountants, they probably have a particular specialty, because the tax law is so immense and complex.
Mm.
Way one CPA knows everything.
That's great.
But if you walk into a company, right, a large company, you'll find that they employ several accountants.
Yes.
Every successful company employs accountants, right? And the accountants aren't there to advise them on tax. They're there to help them run their business.
Mm-hmm.
The accountants are the ones that keep they're the ones who have the language. They're the ones recording the data, basically.
So we yes.
The company, things are happening to your company, everyday things are happening, and they're recording it to be able to track that data and say, well, this is how much money we made and this is where the money went. Mm-hmm. Are these activities profitable? Are they not? And anything really that you need to know, you could work with an accountant and tell them, look, this is what's important to me to make a business decision. I want to launch, you know, a social skills course.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's profitable, I have to pay the person who's going to do it this much. I have this many children that are interested. Their parents have put interest. This is the time block it's going to take, right? And they'll bring factors to your attention, like, okay, if you use that space for social skills, what else could you be using it for, right?
Yep.
Something we like to refer to called opportunity cost, right? When you do something, you forfeit doing something else.
Yes. Can you say that again? Because I think that's so important, both from a CPA perspective, but also like on earth, right? By choosing to do one thing, you're choosing to not do other things.
Yeah. So you should always consider that, not just look at that one thing. Okay, this thing will bring these benefits to me, or this will happen. But what else could you be doing with your time?
Yeah.
To you, right? So that's opportunity cost. And oftentimes accountants will help you identify that and figure, because you might not have thought of it, right? You might have thought, I have this space here, I'm going to put a social skills group, and maybe you didn't think about other avenues you could take.
For sure.
So the most important part of accountants, I find, is that they're helping you run your business by recording the data in a way that's useful to you.
And I think what the way that you said that about speaking the language is helpful, right? Because I don't necessarily speak the language of that data, you know, like, yeah. So I can look at clinical data or I can look at other data and that makes sense to me. But the financial data, other than the basic P&Ls, right, or profit and loss, doesn't make sense. And so that's one area that I found our CPA to be super helpful. And I love that sort of metaphor, that analogy of speaking the language of the financial component or whatever else it is that the CPA is advising you on.
Yeah. So other things that they can help, like as your company, like if you have a small company initially, that's what I say you need the most help in, right? Just kind of understanding how to read how the business is going, right? Mm-hmm. But as you get bigger, you know, you might have internal controls, right? Like as some of your AB companies get bigger, now the owner can't, you know, they often start off with the owner doing everything, right? And now the owner getting busy. The owner can't be charging the credit cards, or maybe he has to give a company card to somebody, right?
Yep.
Internal controls to make sure that your money's not being stolen, the sessions aren't being billed that didn't actually happen, right? These are all the business owner takes, and you want to make sure you're prepared by implementing a system of internal controls in your business to make sure that things aren't going that.
Right, that you're in a place where things are continuing to operate without your eyes on it as much as they were, and it's still operating in the way that you want or need it to remain profitable and ethical.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, I find maybe companies that don't have an accountant aren't really considering potential liabilities that they might have, right? Like if you implemented a paid time and the people are able to cash it out upon their leaving or under certain circumstances, you might not be aware that that's some money you need to have set aside in case, you know, there's it's a liability that could come due. And if you weren't really tracking it, you might not be aware of what you might owe. Also, a lot with the same for the insurance, sometimes they overpay you. There might be chargebacks because there wasn't something. If somebody's not keeping track of that, you don't really have the full picture of what your company might come due for.
For sure. What does chargeback mean? I don't think I've heard that language before.
So like if the insurance comes back for the money.
Oh, right? Like a recoup?
Yeah. So often they might pay a claim and then it was, they didn't realize the auth was expired or something. They didn't have something, so they shouldn't have paid you. Or a lot of times with the primary and secondary insurance. Mm-hmm. The secondary company paid and then found out there was a primary and they want their money back.
Charge back
for the money.
Okay.
I advise my clients to kind of keep track, especially too with the overpayments, because if they overpay me, you're supposed to call them and tell them, look, and give it back to them.
Because they will find it and they will take it back. So it's better when we find it. Yeah, I agree for sure.
So like those chargebacks as well, you should be keeping track of them. Look, this money, it's in my bank account, but it's not mine. And they're going to come take it soon or whenever.
Absolutely, for sure. That's great.
I think those are some good examples of things that CPA...
How a CPA can help, absolutely. And I also appreciate, too, that many new business owners or small business owners, right, we're wanting to do as much ourselves as possible. And sometimes we think that we're saving money by doing it ourselves, but we may actually be costing ourselves money in the long term because we don't know what we don't know. And so if I think that I have an understanding about what the financial language is, but I'm missing a piece, then I can actually cost myself more money in the long term because it costs more to clean something up than it does to do it right in the first place. And so I think talking about that investment piece, right, not cost, but rather investment, that investing in a CPA, guidance from a CPA from the beginning to be sure that you're starting on the right foot and have clean processes in place from the beginning is a better way than trying to bootstrap it and then to find out later that you've made some missteps. Would you agree with that, Joanna?
Yeah. Oftentimes, too, like the owners don't know what's a legitimate business expense, right? Mm-hmm. Like a consult to understand that is worth it, you know? Understand what can I and what can I not run through my company, you know? So a lot of times I encounter people that have come, they've tried to keep the books all year to save money, and what I end up charging them would have been more than if from the beginning I would have just been in charge of the books, because the cleanup is far more time consuming than doing it from the onset. So Absolutely. It is like a sometimes it costs more money than it saved you by doing it yourself. And the mistakes people I see, you know, because they don't have an understanding of the financial system, right? They don't understand what revenue is. So I've had like clients come where maybe they took out a loan and they classified that as revenue. And that would be taxable income to your company. And it's not. You just took out a loan. You shouldn't pay tax. You're going to pay it back.
You're going to pay it back plus some, right?
Yeah. So it's just that they don't have, and it's not their fault. They don't have an understanding, but it's important to consider that, look, this isn't what I'm an expert in. I don't, you know, and it's, sometimes it's just best to outsource when you're not, when you don't have the time, right? You guys are busy running a company, doing a million things, caring for a bunch of cases. And it takes a lot of time to kind of research and figure things out when you don't have understanding to start with.
Well, and it's kind of like you were saying, right? So by choosing to do one thing, you're choosing not to do another. So by me trying to, let's say, learn about this or that related to accounting, I'm not seeing patients and I'm not bringing money in. So if, let's say, an accountant charges $50 an hour, $100 an hour, whatever it is, then am I actually saving money if I'm not seeing clients, right? So if I earn more than $100 an hour and that's what my CPA charges, let's say, then it's still more profitable for me to be seeing a patient while this paying the CPA. And so really looking at that kind of the resources piece. So I want to be sure to get into the cash flow management, and maybe you can talk a little bit about what even does that mean?
Okay, so cash flow management basically just means to understand the inflows and the outflows of money coming in and out of your business, right? Mm-hmm. Very important for a business to succeed, right? If you run out of cash in the bank and you can't pay your employees, you're done, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very important to, when you start, if at all possible, don't start a company unless you have at least at a bare minimum 3 months worth of cash to fund that business, right? Mm-hmm. There would be 6 months, right? So if you were looking for financing or capital, that's what I would request. Do an analysis of what expenses you think you're going to have and have at least money to survive 6 months. Mm-hmm. So in any business, this is true, right? You run out of money and then
you're done.
Business, right? It's very important in ABA because the primary payers are insurance companies, not people. It's not a store where they pay you and you took it and you give them a product, right?
Right.
You need to wait, and there's a million and two problems that can happen from point A to point B in getting that money in your bank.
Yes.
So cash flow management is essential for ABA owners to be considering and to thoroughly understand.
Perfect. Well, then I'm so glad that you picked this for a topic to talk about, and I'm looking forward to hearing your 5 tips.
Okay. So I guess we'll start with tip one, right? And that's know when your money is coming. Okay, so, right, the income, the money you earn. Understand when it's coming, right? So to understand when it's coming, you have to understand who's paying, right? Break up your revenue streams, right? You have private pay, you might have some Aetna, some Cigna, some Blue Cross Shield, right, some Medicaid. Understand those insurance, those payers you're working with. How often are they paying you? How long are they taking to pay you? After a while, you come to know, like, you, everybody has that insurance company they don't like because they take the longest and they give them the most problems, right?
Yes.
One they really like, oh, I love Magellan. They pay me next to, you know,
yes,
I got my money in the bank. So it's easy to come to that understanding, right? After a while, you'll see, right? So just kind of understand how the concentration risk, right? How much money is in each bucket, right? Like, is most of my money coming from private payers? Is it coming from commercial payers? Is it coming from Medicaid or government funded plans, right? Mm-hmm. So understand the breakout and when it's coming and kind of anticipate the ones that are going to take longer. So that's tip number one, right? So understand, you want to talk with whoever's your biller, right? Do you have a third party or is it somebody in-house? You know, you need to understand how often and when the claims are being sent. Because if you know, okay, Aetna takes usually 3 weeks to pay me, you need to know when those claims were sent out to kind of forecast when that money's coming.
Absolutely.
Okay. So again, consider historical problems, right? So the patient responsibility, I can't say this enough. It's hitting your bottom line. It's not an extra. It's not a bonus. Like, those co-pays and deductibles are subtracted from the money you will be paid. Mm-hmm. So if it is a business owner and say, okay, well, they pay me $50 an hour for an RBT, right? And I'm paying RBTs this much, right? you need to consider that if you never got the copay, it's being subtracted from there. So that's not what you're getting, right?
Right.
Also, I have a lot of business owners like, oh, well, the parents don't want to pay. Have you gone to the doctor, Becca? Do they ask you for your copay before you come back there?
Because hell yes, they're running my card as I check in. And that's okay. That's part of paying for it. And for some funders, it's actually illegal to not make attempts to at least collect a copay. Yeah. And that could be insurance fraud. So we're talking about both the financial piece as well as a potential legal issue when we're talking about copays for sure.
Yeah, very true. So it's too many companies are just putting this aside or not worrying about it or waiting until an EOB comes. You don't need to wait till an EOB comes, right? Did you verify benefits and they told you it was $25 copay? Get those $25, right?
Yes.
So my biggest tip is to establish that right away at the onset, right? Have a credit card form filled out by the patient. You know, advise them, look, we verified your benefits. It's going to be $25 a session. We're going to take a credit card on file and we're going to charge you every month for the week before.
Yep.
Or whatever process works for you, but you need to expedite that money coming in because that is the only money that's going to come in fast, right?
Right.
The money you're going to wait for, you might have problems. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a legal liability. The insurance company is assuming that the contracted rate includes that, right? So now when you start waiving copays, they're like, oh, well, you're willing to take less money, then we're going to.
You're exactly yeah. right. Then they use that data to decrease the contracted rates. And they say, well, so let's say I charge $100 and the patient has a $25 copay. I'm not collecting that $25. They say, well, then actually your rate's $75. So now patient still pays $25. We'll pay you $50.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't want that, guys. We don't. We work hard and we provide a valuable service. And when we don't charge the copay to families, we're actually telling them the opposite message, right? So I'm saying that this is an important service, but I'm also waiving part of that fee for you. That's me telling you that it's not actually important and we want to do the other, right? This is important. It costs this amount and this is a business relationship. It's not a friendship. And so I'm not doing favors. I'm not doing that type of thing. And so I think that it's part of setting a boundary in that professional relationship for the families, as well as contributes to the legal and ethical service provision and the financial health of your business.
Yeah. So that I can't reiterate enough. Patient responsibility needs to be collected as soon as possible.
It sounds like that's something that you see omitted frequently.
Yeah, I see often companies come to me and it's just like, I'm like, oh, well, you know, they have problems with claims and I see a lot of patient responsibility and they're like, oh, well, we're waiting for the EOP. Or them telling me the parents are pushing back. I don't care. Tell them if the doctor, when they go see their pediatrician, ask them for that copay before they walk in that room. That is part of the service. And that, you know, there's no reason why companies, ABA companies should play it any other way.
For sure. And so that again is viewing ourselves as medical providers, right? We're billing as medical entities using medical insurance. We need to operate as medical organizations. So I appreciate that reminder. Good tip.
Okay. And the last part of this, know when your money's coming in, is to consider the beginning of the year implications. I get a lot of companies with problems at the beginning of the year because they did not re-verify benefits. They don't know that so-and-so has a deductible. So-and-so has gotten out of this different policy with a different copay, and it's not till months in. It's much harder 3 months down the line to go to a parent and tell them, look, you owe us this many thousands of dollars because over this time, this all happened, right? It's much easier to be upfront with that parent. Tell them, look, verified benefits policy is a $2,000 deductible. We're going to charge you with the contracted rates until that deductible is met, and then we will start with the whatever benefits are quoted after that.
Absolutely.
And so the beginning of the year comes with a lot of, especially like this year, with already we have a huge thing of all the new CPT codes. And
yes.
They're going to arise there. To add to that you weren't prepared for deductibles and co-insurance changes would just cause a lot of problems for your business.
Absolutely. And also potentially for your relationship with your families, right? Because you're the expert and this is a legitimate business. And so if we are presenting ourselves as disorganized and unsure and missing pieces, that does not instill that expert persona, right? I mean, that does not help put trust in us as providers. We have to be good clinically, but we also have to be good in the business sense. And that's why sometimes outsourcing is important so that you can get that information from somebody who knows it best and you can do what you do best, which is the clinical piece.
Yes. Yeah, and that goes true for everything, right? Not just accounting. Like if there's something you're doing that somebody else could be doing better, consider the opportunity cost. Like I outsource the IT because I'm not going to.
Girl, me too. I don't know crap about IT and I don't want to learn it. So I want to pay somebody to be able to take care of that so I can do the other stuff. Yeah. My CPA said once, she was like, Dr. Beck, I know you really like the data. The thing is you need somebody who can just give you the data you need to see and so that you can make decisions about it. You don't need to be in there cleaning it up and looking around and trying to make sense of it. You need kind of a one-page handout or somebody to walk you through the major points because that's what you need to know. You don't need to know all of the little intricacies. And sometimes I wonder or I think that we worry that if our eyes aren't on it, that something's going to go wrong. But guys, we don't know what we're looking at. I mean, we just don't, not with the same depth and specificity that a CPA does, or same with like legal questions, right? So you may have done a Google search on it, but that is not the same as a law degree or being a certified public accountant, right? And so you need to get the main information. You don't have to know everything about everything. You need to have a great team around you that knows what you don't know so that you can trust their guidance. And I think a CPA is a valuable part of that process.
Exactly. I agree 100%. Okay. So tip number two, once you know your money, where's it coming from, right? You got your private pay, you understand your concentration risk, know your expenses, right? Now you tell all my clients, list your expenses. When they come to me, list your expenses. Tell me what expenses are every month, right? And the most important thing I want to know about them is, are they fixed or are they variable? Okay. Fixed meaning that it's the same amount every month, like your rent, probably same amount every month, right? A fixed expense. Variable meaning like the utility bill. They could go higher or lower depending on the usage, right? So the variable ones, what I also want them to understand is what factors are affecting them, what causes that expense to be variable, right? Like a lot of the data keeping systems, I know they charge you per employee or per patient depending on what company you go with. So that's what would cause them to be variable.
Okay.
There's some expenses that I find my clients don't even really understand, like workers' comp. They're like, I pay this much a month. But did you know it was a percentage of payroll?
Yep.
That amount turned out to be wrong because you were not tracking that your payroll increased. You're going to be hit with a huge bill.
Yep.
So that's why I think it's really important that they understand. And then the most significant thing is the timing. When are these bills going to hit my account, right?
Right.
So I tell my clients, list all your expenses. Tell me if they're fixed or variable and give me the timing. If they're variable, I want to know what moves them so I could forecast, right? If it's clients they're servicing, then when we meet next month and they tell me they picked up 5 new clients, I can forecast that expense has gone up. So also other expenses that business owners, most of the ABA business owners I deal with don't own C corporations, right? They have flow through entities, right? Which is like an S corp or an LLC, right? And what that means is that they will pay the tax as an owner on all the earnings of the company, regardless whether they took that money or not, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times you don't understand this. You need to consider your own tax expense, right? Every quarter, you need to be sitting down with your CPA and telling them, look, this is what happened these 3 months. How much am I looking, right? Have I paid enough money to the IRS? A lot of business owners don't even understand that you are required to send the money every 3 months. It's not like a choice.
It's not an option. No, yeah. You must send it. They want their 40-ish percent, right?
They want their fee. Get just that. And then when they get upset, a lot of times they get upset when I tell them, I'm like, you know, the people working at McDonald's get hit right away. They don't ever see those dollars. Every W-2 job gets the money taken out right away. So why would you think that it's any different for you, right? Mm-hmm. You need to be factoring that expense in because you need to be saving or keep enough to distribute to yourself to pay that or save personally for that. So, in relation to expenses, I always tell them to factor in miscellaneous expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's always miscellaneous expenses, right?
There is.
Some expenses month that you weren't forecasting that comes in, building a budget. It's like you at your house. Like I tell my husband, every time we go to the grocery store, like, oh, well, now we need paper towel. Now we need toothpaste, right? 1 week toothpaste, right? Those are things that you didn't factor into the grocery store. But every week something's happening.
Yep.
Right? So just like that in a business, you need things that maybe you weren't factoring, something that came up. So build in a miscellaneous budget into your expectations of those expenses to avoid having a problem or falling short one month.
For sure.
Okay, so that's tip number two, understand your expenses and most importantly, the timing and what causes them to change.
Yes, great tip.
So once you have tip number one, right, your revenue, you know when it's coming, you know what changes it, and you have your expenses listed dates. Tip number three is to manipulate due dates.
Okay.
Once you have a map of the money and when it comes and the expenses and when they're due, you can most companies will let you work with them. Like if you tell them, can I change the date, right? Some won't, like the rent they want or whatever.
Sure.
But a lot of companies like the cable rule, the internet, you know, you can call and negotiate and ask them to change the due date. Change it to when it's convenient for you based on the times of the months that you know you're falling short or you're going to have extra, right?
Yes.
So also get a business credit card, right? Mm-hmm. Just to help you with the cash flow, you know, put expenses there. If you can't manipulate due dates, pay them with a credit card. And then when you're okay that month, pay the credit card off.
Pay the card. Yep.
Yeah. Don't let them build up. Right? That's a bad idea. We don't want to pay interest on them, right? But use it to help your cash flow.
Right. It sounds like that can be kind of a buffer, right? So cash flow, we want it to be moving smoothly and consistently. We don't want like rapids and then stops and then rapids and stops. Is that a fair thing? We want kind of things to be as smooth as possible.
Yeah. You want to be able to be in control of it as much as possible by the factors that you have some control over, right?
For sure.
Control over the revenue coming in and so forth. But what you can control, you want to control to your favor.
Okay? Yes. Yes.
So that's tip number three, right? So manipulate due dates, use a business credit card to help you if the companies won't let you manipulate the due dates, right?
Perfect.
So tip number four is that it's all in accounts receivable for AV companies, right? So what's accounts receivable? People don't like that word when they're not accountants, but it basically just means it's who owes you money, right?
Yes.
For services that have been rendered, right? You've done your job, now people owe you money, okay? Accounts receivable is the most important part of an ABA company, right? And a lot of business owners that I come into contact with, you know, they hire a company, right? One of the, maybe the big companies that do data collection and everything, we do the insurance.
Sure.
Most of them are using a company like this, and then they exhibit no oversight over this process, right? Over the art. Well, we put in our sessions, we render them, it's done, right? No oversight, right? What happens when there's no oversight? You're not aware of cash flow problems.
You're leaving money on the table.
Yeah. So first you won't be aware if there's, unless you're talking to these people, you're not going to be aware that maybe somebody's claims haven't been being paid because it's under a dispute. Maybe it was flagged out of network, but you're in network and they're currently disputing. It's going to take like 3 months to fix, right? So
right.
You know that you're going to have a cash flow if you're not on top of accounts receivable. Then number two, you lose a bunch of money. And I mean a bunch of money. If you are not if you don't have somebody on your team or you haven't outsourced, and I'm not saying these big companies that they're not well, they could very well be doing their job fine. But if you do not, nobody cares about your money like you care about your money, right?
Yes.
You need to exhibit oversight. They have to know that you're listening, that you're watching, that you're checking, right?
Yep.
Because if not, they're not going to be pressured into constantly overlooking, right? It's not their concern whether your cash, you know, they have no idea about your cash flow and how you're doing and that you might need this resolved ASAP because you need money coming into the company,
mm-hmm.
right? So you need to have oversight. Now, the best approach for this is if you had either outsourced to an accountant or somebody on your team that could actually independently keep track of, look, this is what was built, right? I went into whatever rethink and this much was billed. Has it been collected, right?
Right.
Are there problems? There's always problems.
Yes. So it's not, is there problems? It's yeah. Where are the problems and how do we need to respond to resolve them?
Yeah. So because it's endless, the amount of money that would be left on the table.
You
have, yeah, even for a small company that just started, you will leave thousands and thousands and thousands.
Yes.
Of thousands, and I've seen millions lost by companies that did not have accounts receivable management, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to really understand. So if you don't have the capacity of well, these are this is the best case scenario. Invoice for everything, right? You keep your independent invoice. Somebody's checking those EOBs against the invoice. Problems are being identified. They're being kicked back to the insurance bill, right?
Yes.
Scenario. Every EOB is read, and that is the best, right? Every EOB is checked. Every problem is kicked back, and everything is being kept track, right? If you don't have that capacity, at least exhibit oversight over those big companies by checking that. Most of them would let you do an AR aging report.
Yes.
You guys, also, a lot of the business owners don't know, but so it's basically the accounts receivable and it's lumped into buckets, right? Mm-hmm. And those buckets mean like, okay, this dollar amount of claims have been outdated by 30 days, and then some by 60, some by 90, right? If something's in the 90-day bucket, I'd have questions.
So, yes. You know,
I would be contacting your insurance bill and asking, why is this in the 90-day bucket, and what are we doing to resolve it, right? 30 days is normal, right, for our type of business.
Sure.
4 weeks, right? 60 days, yeah, a lot probably go into 60 days because of, okay, they want this or they want that, or this wasn't there, or they didn't pick this line up, or they have every excuse in the book.
Yes.
You know, they didn't see it, it didn't come in, they don't know why this happened, you know? So yeah, things will be in the 60 days, but I like to tell people, just try to strive for 75% in that 30-day bucket and 25% in the 60-day bucket, right?
And nothing in the 90 days.
Yeah. And if something's there, make sure that you know about it and that you've done something about it, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need to even get the clients involved because it's their insurance company and they need to call and pressure them and say, look, my child is not receiving services. They might not keep receiving services because you guys haven't paid them.
So absolutely. Right?
Because at the end of the day, they're the customer, not the provider, and they're much more likely to appease a customer than a provider. Yep,
absolutely. The insurance companies respond more quickly to their beneficiaries than to us as providers. And I think that idea or that language of they're the customer, right, is a great one to use.
Yeah. So I can't stress enough, accounts receivable. Somebody needs to be monitoring every session that was rendered. Was it paid? If it wasn't paid, why not? Is there an issue? Because it's not a question, like you say, of if, it's a question of how much money.
Yes. And even if you're paying a larger company to manage that, you still should have oversight, because I think that's kind of important too, right? So what Ioana is saying is it's fine to have somebody else doing that. And as the owner or leader, you still need to put eyes on it. It's not blind trust, maybe I don't have eyes on it every day, but twice a month, I'm looking at that and I need to see, you know, sort of this guideline I love that you give is the 75% in the 30-day bucket and then 25% in the 60-day bucket and nothing in the 90 days. And if you're seeing more if that ratio looks off, then remember, you're the customer to that company. So you need to tell them, I need an action plan for this. Where are we on this? This must be resolved by X date. And it's okay and important and maybe even necessary to apply that pressure to the person or the company that you are paying to take care of that accounts receivable for you. Perfect.
Yeah. And so another important part of that is, a lot of times if patient responsibility kicks in again, a lot of times you're quoted benefits incorrectly. You know, that's an unfortunate reality. Depends who you get on the phone, right? You can call three times and get three different stories, right? Because they didn't understand what you were asking for, especially in ABA, because a lot of the reps who answer the phone don't really understand it's a different segment or might be attributed to different benefits. And so you want that whoever's responsible as pro function to be advising you. Look, we've been getting EOBs for so-and-so client, and it looks like they're assessing a $40 copay, not the $20 you've been charging them, you
right.
know, because as soon as you take care of that right away, then you can start recouping some of that money versus not knowing at all, and you were quoted the wrong benefit you were costing. So the review of the explanation of benefits is a vital part, and it's really worth to have somebody invested in this or somebody helping you manage the accounts receivable, whether it be you or an account.
And as we are talking about the checking benefits, both Michelle Rimmer and Michelle Silcox have been on earlier sessions talking about what is an EOB, how to understand what's on there, how to do benefit checks. And so if you're hearing Ioana and thinking, gosh, I'm not even sure what that is, definitely go back and take a look at some of those earlier podcast sessions. And I can link those in the show notes because that's so important.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so and tip number number five is don't put all your eggs in one basket, right?
Yeah.
I have people, companies come to me only credentialed with one insurance company. Okay. They only have clients for one insurance company. What happens when that insurance company has a problem? Your business stops. There's no other money, right? Especially at providers that just take Medicaid, that can, like down here in Florida, they continuously have problems. So three months, you know, no pay. Nobody's paid. Okay. You don't want to put yourself in that position. Number one, because it's bad for your business. And number two, it's not great for your clients either. Generally speaking, if you have a client, you have an active authorization, you have an authorization, it was given to you, right? You might have problems, but eventually you're going to get that money, right?
Right.
You don't want to stop services to that one child because you're having cash flow problems because you can't pay your therapy, right? If you spread out by being contracted with several commercial payers, find some other revenue streams, right? Do the social skills class. Maybe you want to do early intervention. Find some private, maybe, you know, whatever it is, find some other revenue streams to help fund your business. So when one insurance company has a problem, right, whether it be a government issue or because let's say one insurance company is being bought out by another one there, and so they're stopping in the claims or they're delayed, right? You don't want your whole business to kind of halt. So concentration risk is very real for anybody, right? Any type of business. But so you want to be able to spread it by get contracted with more than one payer, you know, find private pay clients, find other revenue streams, find ways to bring money to your business that's not just relying on one payer.
And while that's important for, the business health and also for the patients or clients, remember, it's also important if you have employees because people are depending on you to be able to take care of their families. And so I think thinking about those implications across different people, right? So for the clients receiving services, for your own business health, and then the impact that that has both on your own personal income, but also that of your employees that are really depending on you to provide consistent and dependable work so that they can take care of their families.
Exactly. Yeah. Very important. Very true. Good point.
Perfect. I wonder if you are able to just run through those five tips again for people to summarize what you talked about, because there are so many great ones and I want to be sure that everybody's got them down pat.
Okay, so number one was know when your money is coming, who it's coming from, the timing of that money, you know, understand expected delays that you've seen historically. So know when the money's coming, who it's coming from. Number two is know your expenses, understand your expenses, understand what makes them move, when their due dates are, okay? Number three was be able to manipulate due dates either by talking with your vendors or by using a business credit card to help your cash flow at times when you don't have much coming in. Tip number four was it's all in accounts receivable, right? Money will be left on the table. Your money will take long to come in. Your cash flow will be affected if there's not some type of accounts receivable management in place. And our tip number five is don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? Spread out your concentration risk by having more than one payer source or revenue stream.
Perfect. I think that's such great information. And Johan, it's obvious that you work really hard. I'm wondering if you can tell us just a couple ways how you balance your work and your rest of your life. How do you practice some self-care?
Well, it's really difficult, right? I think it's all very difficult for all business owners.
Yes, girl. Yes. That's why I'm asking you about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just try, I have two small children, so I try, by 6 o'clock I leave here because I have to go, you know, spend time with them before bedtime.
Yes.
So that's, I think, the extent of my self-care. When they're asleep, I'm back to working at my laptop. I try my best to get a walk in when I can, but...
You're doing what you can. So I hear you saying that some of your self-care is setting boundaries, right? So when you leave the office, that time between then and when your kids go to bed, that's them time. And that's important. And in it making it them time, it's also you time because you're mom. You're not just this great CPA. You're also a mom. And so that you're filling that bucket as well.
Yeah. I also recently have taken my work email off my phone, and that's helped a lot because getting in, you get one that's going to make you stressed out and you can't even have that time.
For sure.
Relax at the house or anything. So that's helped a lot with the self-care. You know?
Good. And if people are listening to this and they think, gosh, I really want to talk more with you, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
So we have my email is okay. I give the office number is 954-395-8107.
Okay.
Then we're in South Florida. My email address is just jmeddy@eddyadvisory.com. We have assistance at eddyadvisory.com. They want to get in contact with somebody on our staff to set up a call.
And I can link all of that in the show notes so that people can find you. And I know that you're in South Florida. Now, I know people are going to ask, so I'm going to ask the question too. Are you only able to work with people in Florida, or are you able to work with individuals or business owners across the country?
Currently, we're serving client AV companies in 12 different states. So we are able to help in other states. We're very honest, if it's a state where tax issues are difficult, for example, California, I always tell my California, yes, get a local CPA for the tax matters. But in reality, what we help with the consulting, the advising, doesn't really matter what state you're in, right? Helping you set up a system of internal controls or a system of accounts receivable management or cash flow analysis, right? That's all the same no matter what state you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So the stuff we are helping with is
and this loops back to what you said in the beginning, right? So it's not just taxes. Maybe you have somebody in your state that's doing your taxes, and you can call on Ioana for some support with the accounts receivable, those internal controls, or some other guidance. And I'm wondering, would you be open to talking with, like, let's say it was me and I have a CPA. Are you open to talking with a CPA that a business is already working with?
Yes, of course. We work with others all the time. We're not competitive. We're only here to help what needs to be helped. A lot of people struggle to find a CPA that understands their business, and that's just what we bring to the table.
Perfect.
But with companies that have other CPAs, we're very friendly with them.
Collaboration is key, guys.
Yeah,
as you're listening to this, it's not a dichotomy. It's a dialectic. It's not Ioana or no one, or your CPA or no one. You can really build and craft a team that can help guide you and help the financial health of your business, right? So you can call on Ioana with her knowledge of ABA and experience with healthcare, and then you can also continue to utilize a CPA that you may already be working with. And if you aren't working with a CPA currently, hopefully this podcast session has given you some information to think about and kind of make a plan to move forward. So as always, time is our most valuable resource because it's limited. And so Ioana, I want to really thank you for taking time out during the workday to share your knowledge and experience and come on the podcast, The Business of Behavior. And I also appreciate all of the feedback that you give in the Business Builders group on Facebook, because that's how we initially connected. And I think you've been really generous with your time and knowledge. And I want to just say thank you for that, for sure.
Well, no, thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it greatly, and I had a nice time.
Wonderful. Thanks. Have a great rest of your day, everyone.